Kathleen Fitzpatrick is Associate Professor of English and Media Studies at Pomona College in Claremont, California. She's also the author of The Anxiety of Obsolescence, the American novel in the age of television. In her book, Fitzpatrick examines the novels of Don DeLillo and Thomas Pynchon.
Both of them write about television, though, I mean, one of the things that I'm interested in is the kinds of anxieties that they're writing about television reveals. And so, first of all, DeLillo in Mao 2 has a central character, Bill Gray, who is himself a novelist and a very Pynchon-esque novelist at that. He has published two novels that made an enormous splash, but then became very reclusive and has become this figure, this sort of cult figure that people are trying to find but cannot find. He's been working on his third novel for something on the order of 20 years and can't quite seem to get it right and release it. He is surrounded by figures who are drawn directly out of or draw their energy out of television. And this is all happening at a moment in the 1980s in which it appears that there has been some kind of collusion between television and terrorism, in which terrorists, particularly at this point in the Middle East, are using televisual spectacles to get their messages across. And so there's a very high-profile kidnapping in this novel of another author who is a Salman Rushdie-like figure. And this Pynchon-esque figure decides that he is going to go forth and save the day and ultimately is destroyed in this process. So we have in Mao 2 a novelist who is literally destroyed by his desire to be important in a culture that is so profoundly affected by televisual spectacles.
Wow.
At the same time, Pynchon in Vineland, which is published again in the mid-1980s, has television operating in that novel as one of the major tools used in a post-1960s fascist takeover of the U.S. government. That it becomes the primary tool of pacifying and mollifying the public to keep them from paying attention to the politics that are going on around them. So there's a real recurrence throughout both of their work, both Pynchon and DeLillo, of television and the televisual audience as being dehumanized and depoliticized and leading to a kind of dangerous passivity that is contrary to everything that ostensibly the novel stands for.
But it's they both then ascribe to television enormous power.
Absolutely, absolutely. And a power that makes them very nervous and a power that they definitely set themselves against, that they as novelists are going to be writing against the culture.
It's not so much that they're afraid that it's going to take away their livelihood. There is this sense that somehow the novel is a force of good, writing is a force of good, and television is a force of evil. But in fact, both tell stories. How do they get past that? Or is it that they, is it the choice of stories or the way in which the stories get told?
I think in large part it is the way that the stories get told. They are clearly both very interested in narrative, but there's a way in which both of these novelists, and in my book I use them as sort of emblematic of a whole range of novelists who have these same kinds of interests, who would argue that what gets lost in moving from a culture that is fundamentally interested in the novel as the means by which narratives are transmitted to a culture that focuses on television is the use of language. That language itself, which is the thing, according to these novelists, that makes us most human, falls by the wayside in favor of a visuality that becomes a bit benumbing and misleading.
So the use of sound and image to drive story somehow is less substantive than the effort that you need to take. Because reading a novel is often descriptive of sound, descriptive of image, descriptive of story. Putting words in your way so that you then become more actively involved. Is that what they're saying, that television doesn't do those things?
I think yes. I mean, part of what they're suggesting is that the ways that a reader interacts with language are more active and more focused in dealing with print on paper than television watchers' activity in interpreting the sounds and images that come across the screen would be. There's a sense in which the word is understood by a novelist to be a more direct and honest mode of communication than is an image or a sound which somehow can lie, which is manipulable, which is...
Well, as you were talking about the ways in which television can lie, that's almost a direct quote from David Foster Wallace, another of the writers that you,
yes.
you talk about. He says, doesn't he, at some point, television lies? And it's not what he says, but my feeling as he followed up was, I'm not exactly sure how.
I think so. I mean, I think there's a difference, though, between a writer like David Foster Wallace and a writer like either Don DeLillo or Thomas Pynchon. And one of the arguments that I end up making is that it may be generational. It may simply be that Wallace was born after the point at which television had so permeated American culture until it's just in the backdrop of everything that writer does and knows throughout his childhood and his subsequent life, as opposed to Pynchon and DeLillo, both of whom were around as television came into American culture. Wallace's approach to television, as many other younger contemporary novelists, is more to think about what purpose it is that television serves in our lives, rather than thinking about what television does to us. Pynchon and DeLillo seem very focused on the ways that television misleads or dehumanizes or pacifies or de-individualizes us. Wallace is much more interested in particularly if you think about Infinite Jest, television as one form of addiction that's ranged alongside drugs and sports and other aspects of American culture that are being used to feed a profound void that's at the American heart. And what he's ultimately interested in is what has produced that void. Television is not to blame for it. Television is merely one of the things to which we turn in order to numb ourselves to a kind of psychic pain that we live with every day.
With all of the things that are happening with the change in television technology now, with the ability to watch video on demand, are those things going to affect not just television, they're all frightened now, but the novel as well?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things that's happening in the kinds of media convergence that we're seeing in the internet right now, and particularly in the much-hyped Web 2.0 of social network software, is that many more people are producing many more kinds of writing that are being read broadly, if not by millions of Americans, at least by thousands of Americans. And so I'm thinking, of course, about blogs at this point, that perhaps the kinds of writers who in a previous era before the internet would have thought what I want to write is a novel are now thinking, well, actually, I have many more modes of production that are available to me. I can write a blog, I can shoot a video and I can put it online, I can have a podcast that I produce.
Coming back to the question of television at the moment, do you think that television has had an impact on the way we read?
That's a very good question. Probably it has. I think there have been a lot of studies, and particularly I'm thinking about the NEH Reading at Risk study that was released last year. There have been a number of studies that suggest that people read more and more periodicals and less long-form texts, whether fiction or nonfiction. And so, I mean, I think that there's something in the pleasures of television. I mean, the pleasures of television in no small part lie in seriality, right? In the ability to come back to something week after week, in the forestalling of closures, so that a narrative never really completely ends. It sort of almost ends, and then it drags you back in to make sure you come back the next week. I think there's something in that desire for an ongoing but serially delivered narrative that has perhaps changed the way that we read, that fewer long novels get read anymore. Okay, I say this. On the other hand, I'm in the middle of reading Neal Stephenson's Quicksilver, which is the first of
the Baroque trilogy.
The three-volume Baroque trilogy. Right. So I am 400 pages into 3,000 pages worth of text. And I'm fascinated by this and also fascinated by the number of people who I know have actually read this, who are not usually readers of the big novel. So I don't know. I mean, on the one hand, yes, I want to say that clearly television has had an impact, in no small part because we've got so much information coming at us from so many different directions that probably the amount of time that one has to devote to the act of reading has been reduced. But I don't think television alone can be blamed for that.
Kathleen Fitzpatrick is the author of The Anxiety of Obsolescence, the American novel in the age of television. She teaches English and Media Studies at Pomona College.